Can I have a personal message to the fixer before we start?
Yes.
All right. Fixer. I don't know how I'm going to lead this in. I just need to say our bacon doesn't need any defense. A. So fuck you.
Welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for July 9th, 2010. Hi, everybody. This is Michael Minotti, and I am joined... You don't have to say hi to me, Paige.
Hi, world. It's Mark Whiting.
I guess you'll just introduce yourself. And hey, look, I got Mark Whiting here, my good friend. A.K.A. Beige, A.K.A. Water Kanji.
A.K.A. Blues for Buddha. I go by many names.
I forgot about Blues for Buddha.
Yeah.
I forgot about that one.
There's a story there, but another time.
Sure. So, yep, AJ's still out in Canada, that crazy, crazy place with their crazy bacon.
Yummy bacon. Optimally sliced.
So,
covered in delicious pea meal.
Today we're going to start off with the news, then we're going to go into the Great Canadian Beige Quiz.
Awesome.
That'll be fun, and then we'll talk about some of our topics, and let's go topical, then we'll get into our week in gaming, and that'll be the show. Pretty standard show, but the quality will be anything but standard, I'm sure.
That's right. Canadian quality. It's like 3/4 of a normal...
I'm a little mad at Canada right now. I'm not going to lie. I partially blame you guys for Cleveland losing LeBron.
Yeah, I don't care. I saw that this morning. I'm like, oh, yeah, LeBron James. I guess this is a big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal for us Northeast Ohioans.
Sorry. Until the Raptors win, we're not going to care. Toronto's a one-sport town. It's not basketball.
All right, here we go. So, the kind of the big thing this week was, first, Blizzard announced that Real ID, which was kind of their new ID system where your first and last name is displayed, would become, required for use on their forums. So, you would have to have your first and last name.
Yeah, what an interesting little soap opera this was over the course of the week.
Right. So, they announced this, a lot of people freaked out on their forums, and then, they retracted it just today, actually. So Real ID is no more. I don't know. What do you think about this whole thing, Babes? Was that a good idea?
I don't know. I mean, I don't play WoW, so I don't think I'm the right person to comment. But I was... See, I mean, at first, I sort of... My own thought process followed the same arc as Blizzard's, right? I heard it, and I'm like, oh, well, okay. I guess people... if they want to troll now, then people are going to come after them. But then I started reading all of the articles written by, for example, women or people, you know, minorities who get picked on the forums or whatever. And there were all these really good arguments being made about why they shouldn't be specifically identified and why they were going to have to bow out of the participation in the forums, basically, or get harassed. So... That much I can understand. It always was a bit of a weird decision, but then seeing Tycho link to the, like, Facebook Blizzard thing today, suddenly all of the clicks went off, and I'm like, oh, okay. That's why they're pushing this thing through.
Right. And it was kind of weird that the Penny Arcade guys were kind of against it, because they kind of brought a lot of this to light in a way, with that internet fuckwad theory comic a long time ago.
I read a lot of comments along the lines that... those types of forums tend to self-police a bit. I mean, if all the forums I've been on, it's always been a pretty wild and woolly frontier. But I don't think there was anybody there really crying out to have your name linked permanently.
Yeah, I guess.
Have you ever participated in WoW forums? I mean,
Too much. The last forum I was really in was the old 1UP radio boards.
Sure. Now, I noticed that they are going to bring it back, some kind of real ID thing with StarCraft 2 when it launches. And that,
well, Real ID is still a thing. It exists right now in some capacity.
Sure. But it's going to be opt-in, so they'll have all kinds of...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I saw what was a comment today, if they just made it a pet, opt-in and get your WoW pet, and...
yeah, everyone would love it.
They'd have total buy-in. So, I mean, it's really interesting. I'm surprised that Blizzard backed off so fast, because you have to believe that they had quite a lot of business interest in this going through.
I think there was some sort of rumor that this was more Activision's doing than Blizzard's, although I'm beginning to think that's just more of a, well, Activision's evil, let's fabricate this kind of rumor. I don't know.
It wouldn't be too hard.
Right. Anyways, we're going to talk about this a bit more, actually, later on. So we'll move on for now. And other things that we will be talking about more later on, but I just kind of wanted to get it out there now. Dragon Age 2 has kind of been officially confirmed. The big surprise is that it's only going to have one kind of protagonist option. It's going to be a human male or female named Hawk.
With an E,
yeah. Hawk doesn't screen... It doesn't seem to fit into their sort of realistic fantasy setting, does it?
Well, I suppose we'll be talking about this later, but I was walking along in the subway. I didn't hear the bit about it being exclusively a human to start with, so I was thinking, well, what kind of a name could you give to an elf, dwarf, human, and a male or female, and still not have it come out as horribly out of place?
See, I agree with you there, but it is just human.
Yep.
Basically, it's Commander Shepard.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. But I know you really like this. I know I have some reservations. We'll get into that in the Let's Go Topical segment.
Yeah, they released a bunch of extra information about it today, which I assume you saw, right? So it's going to be... what else did they say? Just a little backstory about it, like your character's a survivor of the plague, or what's it called? The thing that makes all the...
Darkspawn, right?
The Darkspawn, yeah. And his story will eventually... He will go on to be some kind of super, super... significant person in the lore of Dragon Age, which I think it's interesting. I'm sure we'll talk about this.
Right. The one thing I do like about it is that since my character died in Dragon Age 1, it kind of makes more sense.
Yeah, didn't it make you wonder at the end of Dragon Age what they were going to do? I mean, my character was a female, so I guess Hawk is not going to be her.
Right.
They had to wrap it up somehow. They had to have an ending that would satisfy both people who died and people who did not. Though, yeah. You could say the same thing about Mass Effect 3.
Anywho, we should move on for now. We'll get back to this.
We'll get back, yeah.
So, Microsoft's Kinect frontman, Kudo Sonoda, if I'm saying that right, has recently said that Rumble is a rudimentary form of feedback, and he's not sure why we are so kind of big on it as gamers.
Oh, it's a last-gen feature. I mean, was that the exactly. Initial line?
That's, I made a tweet. This is my tweet of the week, I think, when I said that Microsoft's transformation to 2006 Sony is complete.
Yeah, I want to see some kind of soundboard mixed on YTMND with those two people talking. It's going to be a problem for them going forward. Did you see their quote about people sitting down this week?
No.
Oh, there's another bit of Kinect news. They said... I don't have the quote in front of me, but somebody who was on the technical side said that Kinect games will be able to recognize a person sitting down when they are programmed specifically to do so.
Okay, because I remember that was a big concern for a bit.
Yeah, it was a little evasive when I read it, but it did sound like the only reason that they haven't been recognizing people is because nobody's actually made a game yet that was for couchers. So it's not an inherent flaw in the technology. At least that's what Microsoft is claiming.
I'm still not sure what to make of all this Kinect stuff. We'll see.
We'll not be buying at launch, but
no, I won't be either. And I gotta say, for me, it's kind of a big deal when I don't buy something at launch, because I'm kind of a consumer whore that way.
Early adopter, yeah.
I am, and I didn't even check it out at E3. I didn't play a single Kinect game at E3. I just don't have very much interest in it. But anyways, moving on. This is exciting news, I think. Studio Ghibli's game, Ni no Kune, is confirmed for a Western release.
Yep, and looks good. I mean, I saw the trailer for this a couple of weeks ago. Looks hella Studio Ghibli, right? Ghibli?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I was a little startled to see that it was a JRPG, because I don't know why. I'd just been assuming all along that it was going to be... something more like Dark Cloud, I guess, sort of a...
Right. It looks like a pretty traditional JRPG, too.
Third person? Yeah, there's battle, you know, magic item. It looks like some sort of Pokemon meets Spirit
It looks like
Away.
Blue Dragon in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, but a lot better looking.
Yeah. Looks, well, you know, would you rather have your game look like Dragon Ball or Castle in the Sky.
Now, I wonder if it's written by Studio Ghibli as well, or if they had any hand in it, because they've been really into Western stuff lately. Aren't they redoing the Borrowers or something like that as their next movie? So,
right.
They could definitely pen a good story.
Well, I want, because the one thing I'm worried about is the translation of the game, because Pixar has been heavily involved with the sort of localization of all of the movies since, at least since Spirited Away, I think. And that's why they've been pretty good since then.
If Billy Bob is in my video game, then that'll be fine by me. Mm-hmm. You know, they keep the localization team. I mean, Disney's got a vested interest in not having Miyazaki stuff come across to the West as crap. So,
right.
We'll have to see.
Actually, I ordered a copy of Nausicaa online. It just came in today, so I'm excited about that.
There's been a bunch of J games confirmed for the West this week. There was a few of them today as well.
What else? Enlighten me.
Oh, it's a weird Japanese graphical. It's a novel somewhere between an adventure game and a digital novel.
Like a Hotel Dusk kind of.
Yeah,
thing?
Yeah, like a Hotel Dusk. I can't think of its name off the top of my head, but I was reading a story about it today. It's wordy, but it looks really good. It has a kind of weird art style and Ghost Trick as well, which they.
Oh, Ghost Trick! I'm excited for that.
Yep.
Just because it's the Phoenix Wright guy.
I don't suppose you saw that at E3, did you?
No, I didn't see it at E3. Okay. It's one of the things that was just, just kind of slipped through the cracks for me. I wish I did, though. All right, moving on. The PSP Go.
Device?
Oh, the PSP Go. Anyways, it may not support the upcoming PSP camera in North America. Once again, the PSP Go is failing to support PSP accessories or games.
The three people who own one shake their tiny fists in impotent rage. I'm sure they're happy about being a focus group right about now, but did you see Metacritic's, they did a mid-year review of all the platforms and the games that had come out for them?
I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, it was good. You should go check it out. They're doing a middle-of-the-year feature for all of the different media that they cover. And they did all of the consoles, you know, PS3, 360. And the PSP entry was just sad. Like, it ranks absolutely on the bottom in terms of game quality. And, you know, there's only been one game for the PSP released, like, this year that has had a Metacritic score of over 84, whatever it is they count as good. And that's Peace
Walker. Is it Metal Gear?
It's Peace Walker. Yeah. And everything else is just... I mean, go read the feature. They break it right down, the top five games and their reviews of this, you know, their Metacritic score and their sort of critical perception, and it's just, it's not pretty for the PSP.
Well, I got some good news then, because a game just got announced for the PSP that I believe will be pretty good.
Yes.
Split Second is coming out for the PSP this year.
Somewhere Pete is very excited. You know,
Split Second is amazing. AJ... lent me his copy while he went out for to Canada doing his thing. I love it. I don't know if I liked a racing game this much ever.
I've heard nothing but good about it. I'm actually a lot more likely to play a racing game in a portable format than I am on my TV here at home, so I think it's a smart decision. You know, it's sort of a bite-sized format that's good for commuting. I always see people playing racing games on the TTC when I'm driving around here in Toronto, but it's not the kind of thing I want to sink hours into when I get home, so good luck.
Racing games are pretty good for portable games, too, and there haven't really been that many for the PSP.
No, Mario Kart for the DS was...
Mario Kart. Well, I guess they got that in Mondation Racers not too long ago, but anyways, I'm excited. I think that's good news, because I enjoy those games.
I want them to sell. Like, if they are as good and as creative as Pete and everybody seems to say that they are, then they deserve some love.
I don't think it's been... I mean, it wasn't in the top 20 for me, Split Second, sadly. So I don't know how... But there also was very little marketing behind it, which I kind of thought was disappointing. Next. Alpha Protocol sequel. Probably not going to be happening, says Sega, after the low reviews and sales of the first game.
Real shame. I'm part of the problem. I did not buy Alpha Protocol. If you recall, it came out at the same time as, you know, Red Dead Redemption and Alan Wake.
Right, and so, Split Second that same day, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So, Spy RPG, I was certainly into it. Like, Alpha Protocol was a long exercise in declining interest for me, where it was first announced, and I thought it was something I would definitely pick up, and then went to maybe pick up, and then no. And then I actually saw a couple of video clips of it on YouTube, and I thought, thank God I didn't pick this up. So it's a shame. I want somebody else to pick up the idea and run with it, but you know now it will never happen.
Kind of Red Dead Redemption it. Just yeah. Like another studio kind of comes in and says, we could do this a lot better.
Yeah, I want Beta Protocol. Bring it in, you know, re-theme it. You know, keep the same
Beta Protocol.
Keep the same words, but, you know, I'd play. There's nothing broken about Spy plus RPG. Just get some good writers on it, I guess, this time.
I saw the game with Jeff Grubb back at PAX East, and when I saw it there, I just was not interested.
This was their dialogue system demo?
It's very aesthetically not pleasing in any way possible. Graphically, audio, it was just kind of ugly and clunky looking.
When I watched the cutscenes on YouTube, a couple of them, ones people were forwarding around, I realized that when you put this game up beside Red Dead Redemption, you really are the ugly child that comes up next in the spelling bee after, you know, somebody's just spelled phlebotomy, and you're like, shit. That is their fate.
But speaking of Obsidian, they have expressed interest in making a Chrono Trigger sequel, of all things.
Wasn't there already one of those things?
There was a Chrono Trigger sequel, Chrono Cross, which everyone seems to just kind of... Chrono Cross is like the game that you bring up, everyone's like, well, the soundtrack was good.
Yeah. That's exactly... I mean, Yasunori Mitsuda hospitalized himself cranking it out. But, yeah, people want to forget the game. The only thing I know about it is that in the first 5 minutes, you kind of undo everything that was cool about Chrono Trigger. So, yeah, no deal.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll have Dragon Ball guy doing the art again. I'm not a big fan of his style, but it seems popular.
What do you think about an Obsidian Chrono Trigger?
I'd play it if it's good. I mean, it's got a strong heritage. It's like you're attaching yourself to one of those beloved brands, so you're either going to be up for lots of congratulations or, like, serious internet hate. You know, if Fallout 3 had dropped the ball, you would have seen exactly the same kind of furious backlash.
But I have to say, I don't like this at all. This makes no sense to me. What has Obsidian ever done that has been Chrono Trigger-like?
Did they give a format? I mean, are we saying it's going to be a...
Well, what do they do?
JRPG in the same way, or is it going to be, you know, first person world of Chrono Trigger?
I'm horrified of them like making some sort of Oblivion style game out of Chrono Trigger.
Yeah,
which wouldn't be a good fit. No, I just can't imagine. And come on, let's be honest. Obsidian's track record lately. Has it been that great?
No, not so much. I said the same thing about XCOM, and apparently it's starting to get some good word of mouth. So I want to shut up before I'm proven completely wrong. But, I mean, yeah, it's you stray from the Chrono Trigger formula too far, and you're not making Chrono Trigger anymore.
Right. I still don't understand, like, why they don't make a Chrono Trigger game. So I guess I like the idea that someone wants to make one, at least. But
it's nice that the franchise is alive, but, you know, not like this, I guess.
Yeah, no. All right, and my last bit here, Capcom's. Kiji Inafune, the Mega Man guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to announce a new game at Comic-Con, apparently. So do we think that this is that new Mega Man game we've been hearing whispers about? Or is this going to be something new?
It could be. I don't know. I haven't really been following. I did see somebody's managed to hack Mega Man into Doom this week, but...
Oh, man. My brother got that. I'm Chris, and he was showing me. It is pretty awesome looking.
Pretty retro-tacular, yeah.
It is great.
I don't know.
I need to try that.
I think Mega Man's found his niche, and it's in the 8-bit era. You know? Mega Man 9 and 10 were pretty cool.
I wrote an article on Bitmob some time ago where I was kind of urging Mega Man to at least try to push into 3D again. And I kind of do want to see that, even if it fails spectacularly, you know?
They could, I guess, theoretically do Mega Man Prime or something, but...
Mega Man Prime. Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. Maybe it's just going to be Mega Man 11. It's just going to be another 8-bit revival.
Yeah.
All right, Baze. It's time to quiz you.
Okay, let's do it.
I hope you know some things about Dragon Quest.
I know a little bit of Dragon Quest, yeah.
All right. No, here's the Greg Canadian Beige Gaming Quiz.
I played the original 2 back on the NES. Hit me.
Well, here's the first question. The first Dragon Quest was released in Japan in what year?
87.
86.
Shit, that was going to be my first guess.
Question two.
87 in North America, right?
Well, here's the second question. Dragon Warrior was released in America in what year?
87?
89.
God damn it. It was my first year. Actually, yeah, you're right. It was my first year of high school. Because I ran into some notes a little while ago that had, like, Erdrick's sword drawn in the margins in my grade 9 chemistry class. So, keeping it real even then. I was, like, one of the 10 people in North America that bought that game.
Third question. What is the U.S. subtitle for Dragon Quest V?
Five.
Oh, yeah. Recently re-released on the DS.
Yeah, four... I want to say something like the Four Warriors of Light, but it isn't, is it?
No, that's that new Final Fantasy game, I think.
Does it have the number four in the title?
No, that would be Dragon Quest IV.
Okay. What's the subtitle?
The subtitle is Hand of the Heavenly Bride.
Okay, wouldn't have got that.
Although I said bribe when I accidentally wrote this.
The Heavenly Bribe, yeah?
Yeah, the Heavenly Bride.
Very Bridge of Birds, okay.
Yeah. Four, what was the only Dragon Quest released for the PlayStation?
The original? Seven?
Yep. Correct. All right, you got 1 point. Okay, these next two are admittedly kind of hard. Five, what was Enix's first game?
Wizardry?
Cosmic Soldier.
Okay.
And the bonus question.
Yep.
What was Enix's last game before merging with Square?
I probably owned it. I don't know.
Dragon Quest Monsters Caravan Heart.
Okay, that one's obscure. If you could ask me, you know, what armor did you unlock in Dragon Quest VIII, I could have given you that. Maybe a few alchemy pot recipes, but Dragon Quest VIII is awesome, by the way. Did you ever play it?
Right, that's what I've always heard. No, I never played it.
It's the best RPG you've already played before. It's a really great iteration on a very rote theme, you know.
All right, well, to keep up this Dragon Quest love going on right now, let's start into Let's Go Topical. And my first topic is, do you plan on buying Dragon Quest IX?
Wasn't this a topic last week?
No, well, last week was, will Dragon Quest IX do well in America?
Okay.
This is more personal.
In this case, absolutely. For show. I was, as I said, a big Dragon Quest VIII believer. It was long as hell, I think 80 hours or something like that. And my wife and I, it took us, like, forever to really breeze through it. But it was really well done. I mean, they really put a lot of attention on that series. They have fully orchestral soundtracks. They have beautiful, cel-shaded, meticulously animated art. Plot was nonsense. But it was great. You know, like, it's a really well-done JRPG. I even like the little 8-bit sound effects that they have. They have little, like, tips of the hat to the nostalgia crowd. So when you're walking across, like, Poison, it had the little 8-bit sound. So, you know, for a person who farmed endlessly in the hills of Dragon Quest I looking for an item that was just total bullshit that my friend made up, I've had a lot of love for that series, and yeah, I'll definitely buy it.
I think I'm going to plan on getting this one too, actually, eventually.
Have you ever played one?
You know what? I got 4 when it came on the DS, and it didn't grab me right away. I ended up selling it. Hmm. But I'm kind of interested in this. I kind of like this idea of making your party almost like Final Fantasy 1-ish, you know, sort of pick your classes from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I was there when Dragon Quest I, or Dragon Warrior, came out in 89. So, I've sort of been with the series from the beginning. I have a little bit of the nostalgia. It's not as big as it was in back in the day, but like I remember in 89 there were very few games that were like Dungeons and Dragons, which I was also very into in 1989, and the idea that something with hit points and, you know, monsters to kill and that stuff, it was very novel on the NES, and
hard to imagine now.
Yeah, it was really the first kind of JRPG that made itself way over here. It and Final Fantasy hit it about the same time approximately. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it'll probably take forever. That's the only thing I don't like about it. I'm a little weary of these JRPGs that take forever. I noticed that, especially in Dragon Quest IX's case, the length of it has been a big selling point. It's been a bullet point on the box, right? Where the quest is X long, but with all the side questing and the cooperative stuff with your friends, I'm never going to find any friends in Canada that are playing Dragon Quest. I mean, get out of here. I work with a bunch of marketing people who are all... They don't even know from their DS. Nobody owns a DS, much less would play Dragon Quest. We're not going to party up.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a solitary thing. Maybe Lynette and I can do some dungeons together or something. But...
Right, there you go. All right, next topic. Dragon Age 2 mm-hmm. is making a mistake by dropping the multiple character origins.
Is making a mistake. That's an interesting way to phrase it. They're not making a mistake because they're just doing something different. Now, whether you will like that more than Dragon Age 1 is something to be debated. But
they're doing something different by just making it more like their other big RPG series.
Okay, well, here's my thought on that. Like, what is the best RPG in the last 5 years? You know?
Mass Effect 2. Right.
And, and previous to that, what is the best RPG longer than 5 years ago? Planescape Torment, which also has a very strong authorial control over the main character. So, you know, it's been my position for a while that Baldur's Gate is less than something like Planescape Torment, where the authors... I mean, this is how I see this going. These are the guys who made the Nameless One. You know, they give you a choice of... They don't give you a choice of what the character's name is going to be, and they don't give you exactly a choice about his backstory, but they will let you make a choice about everything else, which is how Torment went. And, you know, in that case, they were able to do stuff like people you knew, they were able to have people who are related to you, they were able to have all this crazy stuff woven into your character's story that is not possible when they give you a blank slate like they did in the original Dragon Age. So... You know, I'm kind of with that. I'm a little surprised because I sort of thought that what BioWare was doing was going hardcore in one direction with the Mass Effect franchise and hardcore in the other direction with Dragon Age. So the
right.
fact that they've, you know, brought it back. Hawk, it just makes me think of Rutger Hauer. I can't see that name without thinking of Lady Hawk. And, you know, but if they do as good a job with it as they did in Mass Effect, I'll be buying it either way.
Right. I feel like Shepard would be the better name for Dragon Age and Hawk the better name for Mass Effect.
Well, what do you think?
I was kind of upset when I first heard about it. I think I've calmed down now. Because that was one of the cool things about Dragon Age for me, was that whole, wow, I can make any of these characters with any of these origins, and they kind of fit into this story anyways. And I just love that I had a completely different experience than anybody else I knew playing it. And that, you know, that'll still be the case. Like, you know, me and you would probably have different experiences on Mass Effect 2. But not to the degree of something like Dragon Age, where who my character was at the beginning really matters what happens throughout. Like,
yeah.
You go back to certain places and stuff like that.
I assume
people
that
recognize
that was a really Dragon Age-y thing. Like, I know I've only...
Right.
There's only been one game, but that idea of, like... Who you choose has six beginnings.
It was called Dragon Age Origins, for crying out loud. That
yeah.
was their big selling point.
Now, you know, as we said at the top of the show, your character can die at the end of Dragon Age. So I
mm-hmm.
didn't expect them to carry the same character all the way through.
No.
I'm not surprised at that, but I am a little surprised at the, like, human male... It couldn't be a female as well, right?
You could be a male or female human. And I'm assuming you could be, you know, whatever class you want.
Yeah, so you might still get, you'll have the mage, rogue, warrior kind of thing going on.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Because, like I said, Planescape was so strong, Mass Effect 2 was so strong, but I like the fact that Dragon Age and Mass Effect were very different. Now, I mean, that said, the best RPG of, the best fantasy RPG of the last 5 years has been The Witcher, and it doesn't even give you a choice. It just says you're playing Geralt. So, in that case, you know,
But it's kind of sad, though, because there aren't very many RPGs anymore where it's... Or at least single-player RPGs where it's make your character from any of these races or whatever and, you know, play through this big campaign we made for you.
Well,
a lot of it is that here's the character you're going
to
be.
Well, let me ask you, would you rather play through... If you had to... How much story would you sacrifice in order to have total freedom over what kind of character you played?
You know, it's always a question, and I'll be honest, typically in games I do prefer the, you know, have me play a character, you make name the character, let him have dialogue, and the story will be stronger for it. I guess I just kind of accepted Dragon Age as being one thing already, and I'm kind of a little shocked by its sudden identity change.
Yeah, I've thought the same about, you know, we haven't seen a Dungeons & Dragons game in a while. We haven't seen much in the way of games where you create party at player select screen and then, you know, go forth. The last one that I really saw like that was Baldur's Gate, and it suffered the same problem in that they had a very... Baldur's Gate 2 had an okay plot, but it had to be vague in the way that Dragon Age had to be vague. Dragon Age, I think, did as good as they could with the idea of you being able to go anywhere, do anything. But, if they made another game that was just, here's a map, explore it, collect up different races to your side, to your banner, and then fight some big bad guy, would you be satisfied with that? Or if they did a much more personal story, would that be more interesting?
I guess we're kind of assuming that the story's going to be better because of this.
It better be,
right, exactly. That's kind of the thing. Now, if you're going to sacrifice this feature for me to sell me on a stronger narrative, that better be what you do. Did you play Awakenings?
Yeah. Oh, wait, was the DLC, you mean?
Yeah.
No, I never did.
I didn't either.
Done with...
I've always heard mixed things about that.
I know that more the Leliana pack or whatever, Leliana's Song, is now out as another DLC pack. So, you know, one of these days I'll go through and I might actually go back to Dragon Age. You know, I have this unhappy relationship with DLC at the moment where I have to wait for the box set to come out or else I'll just be frustrated by it. So I'll probably go back and play. It is surprising. But like I said, these are the guys who did Planescape. These are... If they're building off of things like The Witcher, then you're going to just get better stories. And if that means that we play Hawk, then we play Hawk.
The main thing I still want is just a prettier game, but we'll see. All right, moving on. Blizzard should have stuck with their plans for Real ID.
Should have? Probably not. I'm real surprised they did not. I work in the corporate world. I know how much planning goes into decisions like this. They don't just... it's not just a bunch of guys on Tuesday that sit around and go, hey, you know what? Real ID, that sounds like a good idea. Like, there's been infrastructure builds for probably a year to prepare for this on their end. At least, guys have been working full-time. They announce it when they're, you know, getting ready to do it. But the idea of backing off it at this point in time... That's really unusual for companies to do, especially when like I said, it's tied to things like Facebook partnerships. It's tied to presumably, I mean, who knows what they want to do? YouTube integration with upload your WoW videos. Like, they could do all sorts of crazy community stuff, or just, you know, stronger authorial control on Battle.net. Are they smart to do it? I think Blizzard has surprised me. Every time the community gets really pissed off about something, they tend to react. They actually listen. I mean, I don't know. The WoW or the Diablo gayness is the only thing that I don't think they've ever publicly backed down on. But they do listen to the community. There must have been compelling reasons outside of just the financial motive for them to want to do it in the first place.
Right, and I was pretty high on this idea at first when I heard about it because I kind of thought, well, this is great for Bitmob. You know, we don't have very many jerks on Bitmob, if any. And, you know, this will elevate the level of discussion and debate on the forums. And I kind of scoffed off the privacy concerns at first because I'm like, oh, you all have Facebook, you know, whatever. No one's going to come and kill you. My name's all over the internet. I'm fine. It's okay. But, you know, when I thought about things like, you know, there's a lot of children who play WoW. Do they really need their first and last names? And also just with the idea of World of Warcraft really is a sort of escapist thing. And it's kind of just, it doesn't really fit to force somebody not to have an alt on there. That's kind of the whole idea of it to begin with, right? I mean, fantasy. That's what fantasy is. You're fantasizing about being someone else.
I've seen a lot of good sort of workarounds that people have posted over the week about other things they could do that would help sort of mitigate the privacy concerns. They had something about rather than your actual name, just allowing people to see every instance of every character that you play or something like that on the forum so that people could know, like, what your online presence was quite clearly, but not your offline presence. I mean, you and I are both, you know, middle class white males in our late 20s or early 30s. We're not the kind of people that are
early 20s, please.
Sorry. We're not the kinds of people who are going to be super inconvenienced by this, but all you have to do is sort of back out a little bit and read, like, I just reading a little commentary from people who are, you know, people who are gay gamers, women, people who do get griefed or picked on and who they want, like, the anonymity of their account allows them to play in a more relaxed way. It's not just about wanting to troll, it's about the real world, unfortunately, bringing a lot of problems into the sort of the game space, and they don't want to deal with that. And that's not fair to inflict.
It's just not. And I guess maybe I was being a little bit too optimistic about it. Maybe comparing this kind of, you know, this kind of community would be more diverse than what we even have at Bitmob. When I think about it, there's a lot of people who play WoW, a lot of different ages, backgrounds, and I guess there is. I still think that, you know, if a lot of these concerns really would just go away, a lot of people getting flamed for, you know, what racial issues or sexual issues or whatever, I think a lot of that still stems from people basically being dicks on the internet.
Can't they still just ban people? I mean, there's no reason that Blizzard can't exercise control from the admin end.
You know, banning always seems to be, like, it's always acted like that's a bigger deal than it is. Like, to me, it's just like, yeah, sure, ban somebody for a bit. And, like, but it's like the death sentence on forums. Like, oh my god, you banned him? I don't believe, why not, go ban him, whatever. He'll get over it.
You're saying people overreact to things on the internet?
I think it, you're right. Alright, let's move on. Zombies are overplayed.
True.
This comes up because Red Dead Redemption is going to have a DLC pack that's going to add zombies to it.
Yeah.
What the hell?
You don't want to. I mean, zombies, they're in our games for a reason. And they're in there because they offer the, you know, guilt-free, it looks like a human, it moves like a human, but you can blow it away or hack its arm off with a chainsaw. It's kind of the Cliffy B principle, right, that it's hard to write good plots and stories, but it's easy to mechanically create stuff that you can just mess up. And all of the, you know, every software package that exists for games is, you know, tailored to the human form. Zombies are going to show up. That said, I'm done with zombies. You know, they're
right.
They're Lynette's least favorite. She loves monster movies, and we watch a lot of monster movies over here. But zombies are not, they're not really a monster in the same way. A good zombie movie is more like a national or a disaster movie. You know, the themes in it are disaster. They're more like a force. And you can't really, character-wise, you can't do as much with a zombie as you can with a, I don't know, ghost or vampire or something like that. So they're fluff. They're just fluff creatures. And they don't think they have any place in the world of Red Dead.
I mean, no.
I did watch a movie once called Undead or Alive that was about cowboys and zombies, and, you know, it was okay. But I don't need it. I don't want it in my World War II game. I don't want it in my...
It sounds like the kind of Rockstar bullshit that I usually hate that wasn't in Red Dead.
Yeah.
It's like one of the reasons why I liked Red Dead.
Have you heard of anyone who is hot for it?
I haven't heard any positive. I haven't heard too much discussion about this lately, really. A lot of the discussion this week has really been focused on Real ID.
So here's a separate question. Are you interested in Dead Rising 2?
No, and I didn't even play Left 4 Dead 2 just to show you how sick of zombies I am. Didn't even touch that.
I am interested in Dead Rising, and I'm trying to figure out why there would be a difference there. I think.
Well, at least that's kind of. Okay, that kind of, you know, it's crafted as a zombie game. Like, that's what it is. They're not just throwing zombies into it, like, you know, with Crackdown 2 or Call of Duty or, you know, now Red Dead.
Yeah, zombies are definitely suffering the same fate as FPS games at the moment. You know, how we were talking about after the end of E3 about just being weary, just having shooter weariness. We definitely have zombie weariness right
now. Next Hoth or the next World War II.
Yep.
Next, Team Fortress 2 has the best developer support of any online shooter. This is because the engineer update came out recently, Three new maps, the engineer update, all of it for free.
Yeah, I don't... How would you argue that? I'm trying to think of other shooters that might... You could say Halo has some pretty good Xbox Live-type support.
But that's still pay-for map packs, right?
Yep. No, I mean, the Team Fortress, they haven't even released Meet the Doctor or the Pyro yet, right? Either of those...
They haven't... They've done the updates for them. They're done with all the updates now. Every class has had an update. But yeah, they haven't done the cartoons for those two yet.
Yeah, I thought as soon as... You know when they first released Meet the Heavy, and I wanted to watch all of the character videos at that time, and I'm like, God damn it, just release them. And I had this sense that, okay, these guys are going to spin this out for years.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought at the time, there's no way that that could possibly work. And yet, here we are, how many years? 2 years later? 3 years? How long has Team Fortress 2 been around? A while.
Since 2007, and so it's still almost 3 years.
It's still relevant. I mean, yeah. I'm sure that people are going to go on and play with, what, mini turrets? What are the engineer updates?
Yeah, mini turrets, you remote control for your turrets. Just kind of cool stuff.
It's. I don't know who else, I don't know how you would argue. Only WoW, like maybe, that's not a shooter though. I mean, your specific question was specifically...
Yeah, shooters.
I don't know. What would you say? Is there any possible...
No. Nothing comes close.
Contender?
Team Fortress 2. No, Team Fortress 2 is far away, the best supported... online shooter I can think of.
It would be really interesting to know how many copies of that they're still selling.
Right. That is a good question.
Gabe Newell likes to occasionally release data about stuff that Valve has done, and I'd be real interested to know if it's still, you know, if are we talking Mario Kart levels of consistency month mm-hmm. after month, or...
What's interesting is that it's really a very different game than Team Fortress or Team Fortress Classic ever were already. Team Fortress, the meat of that was score capture the flag things. I think the predominant map type in this game now is that the plunder maps, which is the one where you kind of push the card. That was even in the game at first, and that kind of seems to be the main way to play now. It's always evolving. I just love it. Also, they've made this big push at, like, developing a backstory for the game lately. Like, they released this comic. It's just...
Oh, yeah, the one with the boss lady? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so.
Their world is really great, and it's been... The fact that they don't tell you everything about the world, I mean, they do the opposite of Valve, right? They give you some 9 characters, and they ask you to fill in the blanks about why... What's going on here? And then every little bit they tease, like the little movie from The Spy, or just little things like that. They add to your idea of what this world is about, but they never at any point have tried to canonize, like, a story of a Team Fortress 2. It's just kind of a Tom and Jerry thing where these characters exist in this world, and their purpose is to fight.
Last point. Final Fantasy XIV and Old Republic are about to go into closed beta now. Will either of them be able to topple WoW?
No. Your one-word answer? They might end up being cool things. The Old Republic is the only MMO I've seen that has any interest to me, though I probably still won't play it. I like the direction that it's going. I think that WoW, like, it's just so dominant in its space. There's a sort of... It's like its own... I won't say its own world, but it's almost like its own culture, right?
Yeah. Like its own genre.
Yeah, people who want to participate in that online genre, they mean WoW. Like, they'll dabble in other stuff, but they eventually comes back to it. I don't know how Blizzard's been able to keep it, you know, relevant for as many years as it has, but I would love to see...
They've done a good job updating that one, too, and not just, like, adding new content, but, like, kind of reworking systems and making things more convenient as it goes down.
Final Fantasy XIV, I don't know. I mean, I'm playing right... Yeah. I'm hip-deep in 13 right now, and I have some strong feelings on the subject of that game. But I'd love to see... I think there is space. There's a kind of game that hasn't been made yet, which is like a... I don't know how I'd call this. Like a cooperative, small-scale MMO. Something where...
What, like Fantasy Star?
Imagine that you made a game based off of H.P. Lovecraft's At the Mountains of Madness, and you had a bunch of guys who are going into Antarctica to, you know, do whatever, uncover the truth, right? I think you could make an MMO that was designed for, like, 6 to 10 players, that was a lot more narratively driven, you know, in the sense that people log on, everybody chooses a character at the beginning of the experience, and then they play, like, through a long story as those characters, which is kind of what I see the Old Republic leaning towards. That just happens to also be in a world where, like, everyone else is doing the same thing. But I think that there is a type of MMO that we haven't seen developed really yet, which is more like a, instead of massively multiplayer online game, it's more like a mini multiplayer online game. That and that might...
almost. No, I don't even know what it's like. I kind of get you though.
Yeah, I think there's space for that. As far as the like large world where you go around, kill Zugs, level your stuff up, craft.
Nothing's gonna topple WoW on that.
Yeah, I mean until people get bored of swords and sorcery. I mean, the Old Republic is definitely doing interesting stuff, and I'd be happy if that took off. More competition in that space is good, but I mean, probably EverQuest and stuff is still going on, right?
EverQuest kind of is. I don't know about EverQuest too, but WoW pretty much has monopolized that EverQuest model of an MMO.
Yeah.
If, I don't think for obviously 14, I don't have any faith in that being much different from 11, which I couldn't really get into very much. I'm hoping that Old Republic is not an EverQuest-style MMO. It's hard to say. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, APB is certainly a different type of massively multiplayer game.
Yeah, but it's been getting panned.
I didn't say it was a good kind, but it's...
it's a different idea.
It's a different idea, yeah. I mean, and you could even say Call of Duty is a massively multiplayer online game.
Kind of. I don't like... But I know what you mean. It's certainly an RPG, at least, and it's online.
I think there's more space in the world for lots of people come together to play the same game, and it doesn't have to be WoW. But as far as the, you create a character and you ram around doing stuff, it'll be a while.
What was that shooter for Mag? Mag didn't exactly set the world on fire, did it?
I probably still going on. I don't know anything
else. I guess so. All right, let's move on to our week in gaming. Okay, you've been playing Final Fantasy 13. I kind of want to talk. I want to know what your thoughts are.
I've been playing all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Okay. Final Fantasy 13. Wow. This one's been interesting because I put it in. You know, I'm a diehard Final Fantasy fan.
Wait, real quick. Did you like 12?
In a few words. It was the least liked of the most recent Final Fantasies, but I did. I liked it, but my enthusiasm was a lot cooler towards it than other Final Fantasies. How about
back
that?
Back to 13.
Okay,
fair
so
enough.
13. On paper, it has everything that I want in a JRPG. It's got good characters that are interesting. It's got a crazy-ass world. It looks beautiful. And the battle system is pretty damn good. So right on the top of that, you should have RPG win. But yet, I am really not... I'm advancing through it, and you know, when it was first sort of said that Final Fantasy 13 was a game in which you walk in a straight line and push X for 40 hours, I said, well, that's what Final Fantasy 10 was, and it was one of the best Final Fantasies. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely ready to believe in that 13 could pull it off. Here's my beef with 13. From the moment that they announced that there was going to be a next-gen Final Fantasy, I remember playing the first couple of years, you know, when it didn't come out, there were other games that were coming out along the lines of, I like Folklore. Do you remember that game?
Yeah, I remember Folklore.
Early Folklore. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, you know, how can they ever make a Final Fantasy level RPG in the modern gen? Because the crystal that the art department used to be able to put together in a day now takes a month to build. You know, the art in Final Fantasy 13 is spectacular. There are some crystals there that look like crystals, goddammit. And so, but Folklore, they had these really beautiful environments, but they padded it out by making you run through them like four times each, which got really old really fast. And so, immediately when I saw that, I said, Japan is not going to be able to pull off another Final Fantasy ever again, because people will demand that it be about the same length as 7 or 8, but the amount of development time it would take to create that would be just insane. It would be like, 4 years is insane enough for this game, but it would be insane. So what has happened with 13, in my opinion, is what I expected to happen, which is that they have this really high concept. Okay, they have all these characters, and all of them are like have relationships with everyone else, and there's like this really Byzantine, weird-ass Japanese like relational plot where this kid is like angry at this other guy, and this woman is sad because her sister is a crystal now, and all these convoluted plots is going to be the most high-concept thing you've ever seen. But the only way that they're going to have to tell the story to you is like 30 pre-rendered cutscenes, because that's the only budget that they're going to have. And the only way that they're going to be able to show this environment is in one long-ass strip of land, which you're not going to be able to deviate from, because that is the only budget that they had to create. That, like, it took that much time just to make that one path. And so, sort of, sure enough, that has come to pass. So you have a plot which, in theory, sounds really good, but, okay, you have this kid, and his mother dies right at the beginning. That could have been an important, a good thing. It sounds good on paper, but they had to do it in one cutscene, and it didn't work. And then you had to walk, and you got another cutscene, and they're trying to pack all of this sort of emotional, melodramatic stuff into each cutscene. But I just really think that it's a technological limitation. It's the fact that they could only render a small amount of stuff, and they could only render a small amount of environments. And so it comes off feeling really piecemeal and disjointed.
Because I guess I never really thought about it as a sort of budget limitation.
Yep, I think every problem with Final Fantasy XIII can be traced back to the budget. And it's really interesting to think that if they had taken a different tack, if they'd said, okay, instead of six characters who have like really melodramatic stories that are all connected to each other and blah, 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 if they'd gone the opposite direction and just done really small scale, like one party of people and one really clear story, I think they could have had exactly the same sort of level of environments. And they could have had a very tightly told story, and it wouldn't have come off like this sort of beautiful train wreck that Final Fantasy XIII is. I mean, that's sort of what I think. What do you think?
Oh, I love Final Fantasy XIII. Those points all seem relatively valid. I don't really have a good count. I mean, I can't really argue against anything you said. Just that, I don't know, I guess I'm just kind of used to those cutscenes in these JRPGs. That never bothered me. Yeah, it worked to an extent for me.
It's not the melodrama that I object to. Although right. It is. I'm kind of, as Fiend said, I'm getting a little old for this. You know, like the kid whose mom dies, and so he has this real hate on for Snow.
Yeah, that's a very Japanese sort of thing, Snow. Isn't it?
You know, he's like, I will get revenge, and you're like, dude, you're 14. You look like Justin Bieber. Like, I have a difficult time taking you seriously. But there are lots of other characters in there that I do like. And I really like the world. The Falci, Elsie, like that dynamic is really cool. I just think that their ambition, like their writing, overstretched what they were able to do. I love the battle system, but I'm frustrated that it took them up until... I'm just starting chapter 10 now. So I'm just getting to the point now where you have the entire party in your little caboodle there,
right?
And you can select them and put them in and mix and match them. And I actually said this to Lynette when the game started. Like I said, I was like, wow, this battle system is so good, it could be its own game. And then Lynette said to me, it is the game.
I guess that's my overall thing with Final Fantasy XIII is that I do like the battle system a lot, and that pretty much is the game. It is a lot of battles kind of strung together by in this very linear format and just cutscenes.
I like the idea that each battle is a puzzle and that you have to figure out the correct team to go in. And I really like what they've sort of done with the job system, where you have your fights have a tempo to them, where at the beginning, okay, quick, we're going on defense, we're going to buff ourselves up, then we switch to, you know, fast offense, and then when the tide starts to turn, we turtle up and go sentinel for a while. Like that.
And I like if you lose a fight, you just restart right outside of it, and you can just kind of rethink your strategy and prepare for it and just do that fight again immediately.
Yeah, I think Jeremy Parrish is, he wrote a review of Final Fantasy XIII, and he kind of said, like, this is what the JRPG looks like when it is stripped down to its, like, total ADD, millennial generation, instant gratification sort of form. And I kind of agree with that. It's like, if they could go this far, why did they have to take out towns? Why did they have to take out all the other stuff that makes a JRPG worth playing? Like, people don't play it for the combat. At least, I don't, most of the time. It's a combination of combat and exploration and that sort of husbandry sense of, like, going out into the world, finding stuff for your characters, bringing it back. If they just pasted this battle system onto a game like that, it would be amazing.
Because that never really was the selling point of Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy VII or those older Final Fantasy. It's not like, oh, this method of turn-based battles is just fascinating and I can't get enough of that.
No, and as 12, I think, suffered the same problem, is that it was so combat-focused. The combat was good, but I got really just bored of wandering around in the wasteland, watching my gambits fire. You know, like, if you look at how the Wizards of the Coast, they break down the number of the different types of people that play Dungeons & Dragons and what they're looking for. They have, like, a name for all of these different types. And there's types like the Explorer, who's in there to like, literally explore and find stuff. And it seems that Final Fantasy XIII only services a very narrow band of what people are looking for in JRPGs.
It's a very combat-heavy campaign, let's put it that way.
Sure.
But if you want to think of it as a campaign.
It's beautiful. I just think it was totally hamstrung by its technology. Like, if they just reached less far with their story and just pulled it back to... Imagine if it was just, like, a group of refugees who were trying to make their way to a city. Like, Pilgrim's Progress, if they had a couple of little side areas, they had a couple of dialogue, throw some towns and some interactions in there, they could easily just have done a straight line that was almost as good, and I think it would have worked a lot better. But I'll finish it. I'll play it tonight.
Okay.
I just keep getting distracted. I know it's not as good as the other Final Fantasies because other stuff keeps jumping in front of it, and then I put it down for, like, a week, and that never happened with other Final Fantasies for me.
All right. What else you play?
Defense Grid. You ever played that?
No.
Do you like Tower Defense?
I don't really like Tower Defense, I gotta be honest. Never been on board the Tower Defense thing.
I won't harp on it for long, man, only to say that I have a friend who's a game designer, and he's very kind of OCD, and he loves Tower Defense. And he loves the sort of calming, structured, totally 100% logic thing that it is. And I have to admit that appeals to me as well. I'm an organizer, I'm like a strategist. I like playing chess, I like playing Tower Defense. And so I've always wanted to see, like, what a real AAA tower defense game would look like. Not something that was a little flash game, but, like, you actually sunk some work, you had good music, good units, good atmosphere, good levels, and that's what Defense Grid is. I downloaded it on XBLA, I think it was about 800 points, and it ate, like, 2 days out of my 4-day weekend last week. I sat down, and I looked up later, and much time had passed, so... I'm not gonna, you know, it's a great example of what the genre could be. Like, it's interesting. They've got a funny narrator. The levels are really good looking. They've got these really great 3D environments that are all rendered up with bridges and cables going this way and snow blowing and it's got interesting aliens. It's at the heart, it's still tower defense, but it's a formula that ain't broke. So I spent some time playing that.
That's cool. What else?
Trauma Team.
Trauma Team, what, now?
I'm just going to mention it. I'm not going to, like...
All right. Give me some brief thoughts on Trauma Team.
Play it. That's my brief thought.
All right. Is it as hard as the other games were?
No.
No?
No, okay. Do you like Phoenix Wright?
Yeah, I love Phoenix Wright.
Did you ever play any of the other Trauma Center games?
I played them.
Did you enjoy them?
I liked them in theory, but I never really was able to get very far in them.
Okay, well, Trauma Team is like... It jumped in front of Final Fantasy XIII and completely... It was like just another... while the time that it was in front of me, I was not interested in anything else. It is a really fantastic mix. There's, you know, 1/6 of it is the original Trauma Team formula. Or Trauma Center under the Knife... whatever formula.
Right.
So you've got these 6 doctors. Each of them has their own specialty, and they at the beginning you play in. You ever play Siren or a game like that? Can play the 6 doctors' stories in any order.
Oh, okay.
But they are on a timeline. So if
like Wait, no, that's not like Odin's Sphere. You don't get to pick what order you do those in. Never mind.
No, it's if you want to play them in chronological order, which we did, you can. So that'll alternate. You'll be playing the like endoscopy person, then you'll be playing the forensics person, whatever. But if you just like really love surgery and that's all you want to do, you can just drill right down that tree. And then when you get to the bottom, you've done everybody's like timeline quest. Then there's this sort of one, you know, at the end of Phoenix Wright, how there's always one big case that takes up.
Oh,
a
I
big
love
chunk.
That big case.
Well, that's what at the end of Trauma Team, there's one big case that involves all six doctors and had many components and many operations to it.
That does sound kind of fascinating.
It's really good. There's, you know, like I said, there's the surgeon that's just straight up original Trauma Team. There's the first response girl, and so she's like Trauma Team light. You've only got four tools, but you're working on multiple patients at a time, sometimes like six or seven at once. And it's just really, really crazy. Shit's happening all over the place. You're like busting out MacGyver stuff, like doing tracheotomies with ballpoint pen casings, and you know, like setting people's arms with duct tape and stuff. So,
see, I wonder if the fact that my dad is a doctor is just one of the reasons why I've never really been like very anxious to play these games. That's being a doctor is just not a fantasy I have.
Oh, well, it certainly is for me, and I really like that they totally lost the, like, you know, if you ever play the other trauma centers, there's this guilt virus that gets very sci-fi the more you go along it, like to the point where you're doing like weird arcade stuff where like you're lasering an eyeball that opens in a guy's chest and floats around.
There was a funny cartoon about Trauma Center.
Yeah. Trauma Team does not have that. It gets a little Japanese melodrama at times, but in a good way. Like one of your doctors, as Lynette said, one of your doctors is an ancient descendant of a famous ninja clan, and the other one is a superhero by night. But you don't play the ninja parts, and you don't play the superhero parts. You play their day jobs, which I think is fantastic. You've got an orthopedic guy, and his mode is really interesting because there's no time pressure, but it's all precision pressure. So everything you do with the orthopedics guy is very, very precise. It's all about tracing things with the Wiimote or like screwing in. It's a horrible medical stuff, screwing bones and screws into people's femurs and
nice.
You know. But it's got a very different feel to the surgical stuff, and it really focuses on a different thing. You have endoscopy, which is, it's weird. You're driving around inside people with an endoscope, so your left hand is controlling the scope on the nunchuck while your right hand is controlling the flashlight, and you're like doing crazy stuff like sewing up.
Ew.
Yeah, it's gross but awesome. And then the last two people are completely unlike anything else that's been in Trauma Center before. There's a diagnostician and a forensics person, and both of those roles are just straight up adventure game. So there's no surgery or anything involved. You have a, especially with the forensics, it's like extremely Phoenix Wright. You're going out
right
to crime scenes, you're investigating, you're getting clues, you're combining clues in your inventory, you're making logical deductions based on, you know, the scrapes that you see on bones and the way that this person was shot. It must have been from here and not over here. And those are really long. Like those, each case for a diagnostician or a forensics person takes probably 2 hours to do, so they're fairly lengthy. They're like little mini cases in Phoenix Wright. Mm-hmm. And the diagnostics guy is neat because it gets a little repetitive, but I really like the idea. They give you, people are sick, they come in, they don't know what's wrong with them, so you have to have this weird little mini game where you're talking with them, you're like examining them with the stethoscope, you're holding the Wiimote up to your ear so you can hear people's heartbeats and hear their breathing, and then you get back like x-rays and you get back huge reams of blood work that just have like numbers on them, and so they'll give you this is what a person's normal range of white hemoglobin count for this should be, and you actually have to like sort of do the medical thing and scan it and go, okay, well, their ACT count is high, that must mean something, and you go back to your computer and kind of Google it, high ACT count, and different possible diagnoses come up, and that's all about narrowing it down to one specific diagnosis. But you actually have to like look at x-rays and flip back and forth between, okay, here's a normal human chest x-ray, here's this patient's chest x-ray, is there anything weird about this? And it's actually quite hard to do. So I really like that part really felt like Dr. Shit. So when you combine all six of those tasks into one with this, and then wrap this, like, sort of JRPG wacky-ass story around the, you know, like, complete off-the-wall Japan doing its thing, you get a really compelling package with a lot of cool characters and stuff. So, I mean, Trauma Center is really up there on my underappreciated games of 2010 so far.
Okay. Good, because I'm cutting you off Trauma Center.
Trauma team.
Talk now. You're done with that.
That's all I really want to talk about. I mean, besides that, I've been playing Strange Journey, which I think has the record now for, like, longest-ass DS game I've ever played.
Oh, that's... Isn't that Shin Megami?
Yeah, it's friggin' long, man. So I've been playing it on my commute for months and months. And aside from that and, like, a couple of, you know, Red Dead and all the other stuff that people have been playing, I don't think there's anything really new to report there. So I'm done. Hmm.
I've been playing the Monkey Island 2 Special Edition.
How is it? It's what you've always wanted.
Yeah, it's Monkey Island 2, and, you know, Monkey Island 2 is a classic of the genre and beyond, so it's always fun to play that. And I like Oh, go ahead.
I've only ever played it once, Monkey Island 2, but I remember liking it a lot.
Yeah.
It had a great iMuse. It had great music. I remember that.
And they update the soundtrack, and it's great. The music doesn't kind of blend from environment to environment as nice as it did back on, you know, the original release or anything like that.
That's too bad, because that was one of the real
selling points. It's not, like, terrible, really. I may not have even noticed if it wasn't pointed out to me in the 1UP review, honestly. But there's that.
Is it worth a C?
No, it's better than a C 1UP. Just from the pedigree of the base game that's there.
That's just people. You're hating. You're like that person on the CBC who I heard came on today and said that To Kill a Mockingbird was a shitty book. Like,
no. Why do you have to hate? Haters gotta hate.
Haters gotta hate. Yeah. Is it? I've heard this thing about, like, the MST3K commentary that's over top of it.
I haven't tried that out yet.
Okay.
You have to kind of turn it on, and then, like, you get the prompt to listen to little bits of it at certain points. Hmm. Not unlike what's kind of done in Valve games, I guess.
Yeah, I've never actually... I know Alan Wake has that as well. In the edition that I have, you can go through and hear director's commentary over all the levels. But, I, you know, with the amount of games we have to chew through, I've never really found...
Because that usually requires a second playthrough. And...
Yeah, I've never really wanted to sit down for another 15 hours with Alan Wake just to hear the commentary.
Right. The backgrounds are gorgeous. Some of the characters... I still don't really like the way that they kind of reinterpreted Guybrush to make him look more like the Curse of Monkey Island Guybrush. But, you know, minor gripe.
You didn't like the Curse of Monkey Island Guybrush?
I like the Curse of Monkey Island Guybrush, but I also like Monkey Island 2 Guybrush. And I like Monkey Island 1 Guybrush. And it was always kind of one of the jokes of the series for me that Guybrush looked different in every game. And I think it's kind of a shame that they're just kind of conforming it into this kind of one very similar-looking Guybrush model. But, you know, whatever. Peace Walker, I still am trying to get through it.
You have Hideo on your team yet?
I do have Hideo.
I laughed out loud when I heard that he was a recruiting character.
I can't stand these boss fights that aren't, like, real boss fights, though. It's like, there's always, like, fight this tank or fight this helicopter, and all it is they, like, send out soldiers after you, and you have to take care of the soldiers, and then once they, like, send 20 or whatever at you, then, like, a weakness will open up and you shoot it. And it just takes forever. It's not very much fun. Those are... I almost just kind of... Like, I kind of wish that it was just a more straight-up linear game than with this mission structure thing. Basically, anything about that's trying to be, like, Monster Hunter, I'm not a fan of.
Is it... your vote is that it is not a worthy successor to MGS3?
No, it's certainly not on that level. Hmm. I'll say that. But that's about it for me. I've been playing the Cataclysm beta a lot for a while. I definitely enjoyed that. I think I talked about that last week, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. All
I
right,
enjoyed
then.
Your goblin voice recitation. Oh, the other thing I've been playing I just want to mention briefly is Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Fathers, because we're going to be podcasting about it, hopefully, sometime soon. I don't want to say... It holds up really well, and the DOSBox version they have on Good Old Games is great. So anybody who loves adventure games and hasn't played it yet, do it. It took Lynette and I about 3 or 4 evenings to finish the whole thing, so it's not a huge investment of your time. But right. It's awesome.
All right. Let's get to these releases then.
Let's do it.
First off, we have Sniper Ghost Warrior, whatever. Crackdown 2 for 360. What do you make of the kind of cold reception of this sequel?
Well, haters gotta hate.
Pete has come to defense of the game.
Yeah, I agree with Pete's defense. Now, here, I mean, I didn't buy Crackdown 2. I don't have any interest in buying Crackdown 2. But I stand by what Pete said. Like, if what you want is a silly sandbox to run around and blow up stuff with your friends, it scratches that itch just fine. And, I mean, I don't know what people expected, because that's all Crackdown 1 was. It was just a silly sandbox, too.
The whole same environment that's a tough pill for me to swallow still.
It's interesting that I think Crackdown 1 got more of a pass than I think it should have at the time.
Well, Crackdown 1 was a surprise.
Yeah. It had a lot of positive word of mouth, people like John Davison on 1UP Yours saying how great it was. And so a lot of people went out and got it and dabbled and were like, yeah, okay, this is pretty fun. But then when the sequel came around, I don't think it was Crackdown the original Crackdown that people were like responding to as much as it was sort of the achievement, the way that they'd done achievements, and the sort of early multiplayer thing that it pioneered, which we've now evolved a lot on. You know,
I still don't think it helped Crackdown 2 that it was it was the next open world game to come out after Red Dead Redemption. No. Not to say that Crackdown 2 should have been like Red Dead Redemption, but still, it's kind of tough to sit the two next to each other.
I don't have much time in my day anymore, or much interest. I might have the time, but I don't have the interest in games that are just toys, the way that Crackdown 2 is. Like, just fool around, load up some stuff, blow off steam. And that might be a genre that's popular, and it is sort of surprising to me that the community has come down, like, really poo-poo.
I think a lot of it is because of the very public developer change and just stuff like that. Usually, when those kind of things become public, the sequels do get crapped on a little bit. I mean, you know, Bioshock 2 and whatever.
Sure. I mean, I do want to say, isn't this what you wanted? Like, did you not ask for a big plate of this more? But I guess the proof is just, you know, I bought the first one and I didn't buy the second one.
And so. I don't have too much to say because I have not bought this either. I made a kind of a comic. Some people kind of took it as a criticism. I was just kind of having fun. I don't really have anything bad to say about Crackdown 2 yet because I haven't played it. Anyways, Blacklight Tango Down is out for, I think, 360, maybe Steam or something. But maybe it isn't for 360. Whatever it's out for, let's say PC. It's basically kind of working on the tech that was created for 6 Days in Fallujah, but that game was canceled, so they kind of turned it into this sort of whatever this is.
Yeah, slightly more gung-ho and less contemplative shooter, which makes it much less interesting to me to own. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know about it. So,
Monkey Island 2 Special Edition Le Tuck's Revenge for PS3 and 360 and PC. Shin Megami Tensei Persona 3 Portable. Mm-hmm. Tensei, whatever. Tournament of Legends for Wii. Rise of Flight. Despicable Me, please. Yeah, we're done here. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for joining me, Mark.
Thank you, Mike.
It was good stuff, as always. And be sure to keep an eye out for that. I almost said Baldur's Gate. It's not Baldur's Gate.
Gabriel Knight.
I had a brain fart there. The Gabriel Knight podcast.
It's coming up. I'm also trying to round up people to do a Deadly Premonition side mission. So if you want to hear some real ranting about Dark Horse Canada, that'll come out then.
Watch out for those. You can find more of us at explodingbarrel.wordpress.com. And hey, just a call out. We have a new Squawk Box, which was kind of like our old 1UP page, our 1UP fan page. We've been having a lot of fun there. It's just at squadronofshame.wordpress.com.
Really,
so join us there.
I'm really happy with how that's picked up. Yeah, if you were a fan of the old radio modes and you're not on there, get your ass to Mars.
Right. Get your ass to Mars.
Get your ass to Mars, yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week on the Exploding Barrel Podcast.